The Delight Song, adapted from N. Scott Momaday. I am the feather on the bright sky. I am the blue horse that runs in the plain. I am the fish that rolls shining in the water. I am the shadow that follows the child. I am the evening light, the luster of meadows. I am the eagle playing with the wind. I am the farthest star. I am the roaring rain. I am the long track of the moon on the lake. I am a fawn standing at dawn. I am an eagle of geese on the winter sky. I am the hunger of the young coyote. I am the dream of all these things. I am the whole dream. You see, I am alive. I am alive. I stand in good relation to the earth. I stand in good relation to the gods. I stand in good relation to all that is beautiful. I stand in good relation with all the children of the earth. You see, I am alive. I am alive. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas, on this wonderful day to stay at home in bed because we got to get up an hour early and it's drizzling and it's raw, but thank you for bringing your warmth here this morning. Take a moment to greet everyone and say good morning. Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy. Come and expand the goodness of this circle. Let not the hours pass by in the dark. Kindle the lamp of love with thy life. Let us now stand as you are able and sing, Enter, Rejoice, Come In, 361.
Thank you.
You'll have to forgive our new wick and a new chalice that we're using this morning. It will smoke for a while until it finds its space and place in that chalice. I'd like to point out this morning in your order of service our announcements, which give structure and life to our community. Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like, this is the time to please share a brief verbal expression of a personal joy or sorrow.
I just want to thank the contributing members for participating in the new exhibit, which is out in the hall. And certainly I want to thank the three people who put it up. None of them are here, but it was Kim,
there
Tom.
She is.
Well, that's good because you're late. Okay.
Thank you.
Kim, Tom, and Dick put them up, and they also took the other ones down, and they carefully put them up on the stage, right? And you're going to put some name tags up at some point, yeah. So you can tell who brought the exhibits.
Anel Forrester, gives me great joy as co-president of the League of Women Voters to invite all of you to come this afternoon to join us for the candidates' meeting to find out where they stand, because this is our future of Manhattan. They're candidates for city commission and the candidates for the school board. So it's very important that you come, listen, decide, and vote. Please come. It is the future of our community. 2:30 at the firehouse, the corner of Denison and Kimball. So
thank
please
you,
come.
Thank you.
Larry Weaver, a joy. One of the things that when Michael says our joys are amplified, well, I love life. And this morning, Matt and Amber brought a new life
Drew and
to
Amber.
The fellowship.
Matt's there, and that's
not Matt. Sorry. Wrong.
Not yet. There's
Amber.
Another one on the way.
I'm going to cut my losses and say, Amber. And brought the new life. And yes, Jen has brought the new life on the way. That's a joy. That is such a joy. Last Sunday or a couple of Sundays ago, we sang that Celtic laud that has the line in it for springtime's something or another. For every new birth, for grace and for life, how happy that makes us.
May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts.
Oh, wow.
Now, you're going to need to be ready to be a little bit active because many of you don't realize it at the moment, but you're sitting right where a river is going to be, okay? But at the moment, it's just a little trickle. So, you know, maybe you're just getting your feet wet, but nothing, no big problem, okay? One of the things that I really, really like to do is to sing. And I especially like to sing together with other people. You know, almost everybody likes to sing with other people. That's why we do it on Sunday morning. I have a song that I would like to sing with you. Now, you don't know it. That's scary when you don't know a song and you're asked to sing it. But when you get familiar with it, then it's okay. And here's the way it goes. Now, I also like songs that tell stories, and this song tells a story. In fact, I even drew some pictures to accompany the story, okay? And some of you know about it. Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, here's your part. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Can you do that? Roll on, Columbia, roll on. That's good. All right, and then you do it again, just a little bit higher. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Then we get a complicated line. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Now let's try that all together. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Okay, now. The story goes like this. Back in the 1930s, back when your great, great, maybe even great grandparents were alive, there was a problem out in Washington State. Here was the problem. There was a river. It was kind of a small river as it went flowing along. And some farmers needed water. And so one county built a dam to try to divert some water for the farmers. And you know what happened? That meant less water down for some other farmers. So another county built a dam. Yeah. Problem. Problem, problem. Furthermore, it sounds like a completely different problem. There were some factories that didn't get enough electricity. And you know what the people of Washington finally did? What do you do? What do you do when you've got friends at different places doing different things and you can't work together as a team? Connor, what do you...
Cooperate?
You can cooperate. And that's what the people in Washington did. They cooperated to build two big dams. Okay? And now you might think that that would cause a problem because one of the difficulties that they were trying to solve was that when the counties built dams, then ships couldn't get past them. But the song will tell you the way they solved it. There was a special thing you can make, a special way of getting ships around dams called locks. Yep, I know it's just like a lock with a key, but it's a different kind of lock. It's a lock that lets ships come in, lower the water, swim out, close the gates, lower the water again, and the ships can gradually get around the dam. So here's the way the song goes. Let's start with the chorus. So that's our part here. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Now I have some pictures to tell you what's happening. So here's the first one. Well, I need to separate these pictures. Green Douglas firs where the waters break through. Down her world mountains and canyons she flew. Canadian Northwest to the ocean so blue. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. And see in this picture, there's not just one river, but there's...
You know what? Yeah. I have been there before.
You've been...
Grandma and Grandpa.
Wow. Well, one of the great-great-grandfather of one of the members of our fellowship worked on the dam I'm going to tell you about. So here's the way this verse goes. Other great rivers add water to you. The Yakima Snake and the Klickitat too. Sandy Wilmette and the Hood River too. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Now, the people had to build the dam, and so here's a picture of the work that they're doing. These mighty folks labored by day and by night, matching their strength against the river's wild flight. Through rapids and falls, they won the hard fight. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. And now, before we sing the next verse, let's see. Connor, would you and help Logan build a dam? Logan, would you go with Connor to the side of the stage and put these bricks, these books up? There'll be a dam. And Jake, would you and Blake take these? Burke, would you and Blake, you and Jake, put the other dam way back there. But Connor, you and Logan can put it right behind the lectern, where the people can see it. Other side. And then, Burke, I'd like you to put them way over there by the door. You and Jake, put them way over there by the door.
I put my books there.
Yeah, where the people can see it. That's right.
There we go.
There you go. Good job. And now, kids here, there's a big river coming through, so you better move out of the way. I'd encourage you to get up here on the stage so you don't... Okay, now, the first little dam here, it's not so little, the one that Logan and Connor built, it's called the Bonneville Dam, because the name for the town, thanks, Logan, that's named for Bonneville, where the dam is. And Jake, the dam you built way over there in the corner, that's called the Grand Coulee Dam. Okay, so here goes the song. The verse. At Bonneville now there are ships in the docks. The waters have risen and cleared all the rocks. Shiploads of plenty now steam past the locks. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. And there at one end is the Grand Coulee Dam, biggest by far of the works of man. To power our factories and water our land, it's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. One more time. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on.
Okay, let's go to our classes now.
Roll on. Come on now, roll on. Now it's my great privilege to have our presenter for Helping Hands come forward. She will be sharing why we should give generously to the Flint Hills Summer Fun Group Camp. Welcome.
Good morning. Well, 22 years ago, we had a son born who, when he was just 4 months old, I thought that he had autism. He didn't respond to me. He didn't like to be held. He didn't want me to feed him. He was very independent. He only laughed in response to a sensory stimuli. And so having a background as a nurse, I thought to myself, I wonder if he has autism. Well, Nikki did, in fact, get diagnosed with autism when he was 19 months old. And he developed into a very severely affected child with autism. And we needed round-the-clock help for Nikki. And the school district did what they could to help him, but he was very, very aggressive. And so at 9 years old, he went into the state hospital at Parsons, and that's where he lives today. And one of the things that I remember and experienced, Nick needed 24-hour-a-day input and stimulus and attention and care. And the hospital was really where he could receive that. So my heart, my love for autism began then, and so Nick went into the hospital and I rested and raised our other son, my husband and I, of course. And time went by, and there were many, many other students in the Manhattan area identified with autism, most of them much higher functioning than our son, but some of those same core characteristics remain in every child with autism. The need for 24-hour-a-day structure and intervention. And so a group of very committed moms got together and formed the planning committee to begin the very first Flint Hills Summer Fun Camp. And it's a camp designed for students on the autism spectrum and typical peers. And so 2 summers ago, I had the privilege of being the coordinator for that. And last summer, our family took a trip to Kenya to work at an orphan project. And this summer, I'm going to work there again. And so this summer, we are offering camp for children kindergarten through fifth grade. Excuse me. And then there's a Filmmakers Academy for students on the spectrum at Eisenhower Middle School, grades 6 through 8. And so you know, this camp really serves to strengthen both children on the autism spectrum plus the typical peers who come alongside them and learn about caring and serving others with disabilities. We have many people from the community, including the university with speech and language, kinesiology, who comes and provides sports for us, music therapy, teachers from USD 383. The school district is very much in cooperation with this, and so it really is a community-wide effort. And so, yeah, I'm here today just on behalf of them, and I think to myself, yay, I get to go to camp again. So I'm really excited to go. Pat Embers has worked with us doing sensory integration for our students, and yeah, it's a wonderful camp, but it's very expensive to get the quality of care that these children need. So on behalf of the Flint Hills Summer Fun Camp, we just want to say thank you for caring about these students. And if you're interested in any more information or if you'd like to volunteer for the camp, you could get a hold of me. I think Drew Venom has my contact information. And yeah, any questions about the camp? Yes, ma'am. First come, first serve. Yeah, last summer we had 80 children at the camp, so it was really packed out. We have academics in the morning and field trips every afternoon. They do everything from taekwondo, gymnastics, full-day field trips, swimming lessons with UFM. Oh, gosh, there's no end to the activities that we're able to provide. And it's really that full-day structure for kids on the spectrum that gives parents a break, and they really need that break. So the camp runs for 8 weeks with there's a ninth week, an optional week called Adventure Week, where the kids go on full-day field trips every day. Anybody else? All right, well, thank you. I really appreciate being here. Thank you.
I'd like to share a meditation from deep ecologist John Seed and Joanna Macy. It's called the Gaia Meditation. It asks the question, what are you? What am I? Intersecting cycles of water, earth, air, and fire. That's what I am. That's what you are. Water, blood, lymph, mucus, sweat, tears, inner oceans tugged by the moon. Tides within, tides without. Streaming fluids floating our cells, washing and nourishing through endless riverways of gut and vein and capillary. Moisture pouring in and through and out of you, of me, in the vast poem of the hydrological cycle. You are that. I am that. Earth. Matter made from rock and soil. It too is pulled by the moon as the magma circulates through the planet heart and roots suck molecules into biology. Earth pours through us, replacing each cell in the body every 7 years. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, we ingest, incorporate, and excrete the earth, are made from earth. I am that. You are that. Air, the gaseous realm, the atmosphere, the planet's membrane, the inhale and exhale, breathing out carbon dioxide to the trees and breathing in their fresh exudations, oxygen kissing each cell awake, atoms dancing in orderly metabolism, burns with a fire of the Big Bang that first sent matter energy spinning through space and time, and the same fire as the lightning that flashed into the primordial soup, catalyzing the birth of organic life. You were there. I was there. For each cell of our bodies is descended in an unbroken chain from that event. Through the desire of atom for molecule for cell, cell for organism. In our sexuality, we can feel ancient stirrings that connect us with plant as well as animal life. We come from them in unbroken chain. Through fish learning to walk the land, feeling scales turning to wings. Through the migration of ages of ice, we have been but recently in human form. If Earth's whole history were compressed into 24 hours, beginning at midnight, organic life would begin only at 3 p.m. Mammals emerge at 11:30. And from amongst them at only seconds to midnight, only seconds to midnight, our species. In our long planetary journey, we have taken far more ancient forms than these we now wear. Some of these forms we remember in our mother's womb, where vestigial tails and gills grow fins for hands. Countless times in that journey, we died to old forms, let go of old ways, allowing new ones to emerge. But nothing is ever lost. Though forms pass, all returns. Each worn-out cell consumed, recycled through mosses, leeches, birds of prey. Remember again and again the old cycles of partnership. Draw on them in this time of trouble. By your very nature and the journey you have made, there is in you deep knowledge of belonging. Draw on it now in this time of fear. You have earth-bred wisdom of your interexistence with all that is. Take courage and power in it now, that we may help each other awaken in this time of peril. The goodness in the world, There is in you deep knowledge of belonging. It is from this wisdom contained within it a fundamental source of goodness, going back to the beginning and moving forward with that knowledge, the network connecting all that allows us to be here now, in this moment, in this room, on these chairs, in this place, together. If we do not care for the meadow lark, the water, the air, the insects such as spiders, grasshoppers, wild fruits, grain, and wild grass seeds, these birds need to thrive, the space they need to thrive, we block a major artery, a life-giving source that links us to all that is. Sensing this goodness requires a humility and patience necessary to see, to feel, to taste, hear the richness inherent in each second. The world does not revolve around us. We are just a few seconds in the history of the earth. To understand that truth puts us in sync with the vast mystery of our existence, what brought us over millions of years to this moment. I think of Jane Goodall when I think of someone who truly understands this deep connection to time. She wrote, "From my window as I write in my house," she's writing here at 77 years old, "I can see the trees I used to climb as a child. Up in the branches of a beech tree, I read about Dr. Doolittle and Tarzan and dreamt about the time I, too, would live in the forest. I spent hours perched in my special place. I had a little basket on the end of a long piece of string that was tied to my branch. I would load it up before I climbed and haul up the contents, a book, a saved piece of cake, sometimes my homework. I talked to Beach, telling him my secrets. I often placed my hands or my cheek against the slightly rough texture of his bark. And how I loved the sound of his leaves in summertime, the gentle whispering as the breeze played with them, the joyous abandon dancing and rustling as the breeze quickened, the wild tossing and swishing, and I was a part of it all." She was an amazing kid, as we have a bunch of amazing kids here. When she was about 6, she was visiting some relatives who had chickens, and she had never seen a chicken lay an egg. And she wanted to see this event for herself. So she hid herself in the chicken coop for hours and hours and hours. Meanwhile, her parents were calling out, "Jane, Jane, where are you? Where are you?" And then finally, it was so long before they had seen her that they called the police. The police came, and finally a hen laid an egg, and she emerged from the chicken coop triumphant. "I saw a hen lay an egg." At 10, she formed the Alligator Club, and to belong, you need to be able to name 10 kinds of dogs, 10 kinds of trees, 10 kinds of birds, 10 kinds of butterflies, 10 kinds of this, and 10 kinds of that. And when she was 11, she made her grandmother sign a contract saying that that beach would always be her beach and no one else could ever own it. Her favorite toy as a child was, guess what? A stuffed chimp, which she named Jubilee. Jubilee. So we know Jane Goodall from all of her incredible studies of the chimpanzee. Her first attempt at sitting 2 years with one colony trying to get them used to her failed. 2 years of sitting. Can you imagine the patience and the determination, the conviction, the sense of how important this work was? To sit for 2 years and get nothing? Then she went to another colony, and she sat for 2 more years. And as she sat there, they became familiar with her, and she would have bananas. And so she formed the banana club, and the chimps started coming to get the bananas with her. And as they became comfortable with her taking bananas, she moved up into the trees with them and mimicked their behavior, ate the food they ate so that she could study them like nobody else had ever studied these amazing creatures before. She observed that they have a complex social system, complete with ritualized behaviors. They communicate with one another. They use language. The first person to record that they ate meat and made and used tools was Jane Goodall. She also noted that chimpanzees threw stones as weapons, used touch and embrace to comfort one another, and they developed long-term familial bonds. She observed chimps inserting blades of grass or leaves into termite hills to lure worker or soldier termites into the blade. Sometimes in true toolmaker fashion, they modified the grass to achieve a better fit. Then they used the grass as a long-handled spoon to eat those delicious termites. Goodall challenged scientists to redefine the long-held differences between humans and other primates. After attending a 1986 conference in Chicago that focused on the ethical treatment of chimpanzees, her focus turned more towards helping educate people on how important it is to preserve the wildlife habits, the ecosystems, and the chimpanzees themselves. To preserve their environment, Goodall encourages African nations to develop nature-friendly tourism programs, a measure that makes wildlife into a profitable resource. She says the more we learn of the true nature of non-human animals, especially those with complex brains and corresponding complex social behavior, the more ethical concerns are raised regarding their use in the service of human beings. Chimpanzees help us to understand that there is no sharp line between humans and the rest of the animal kingdom. It's a very blurry line, and it gets more blurry all the time. Complex relationships, blurry lines. Anybody familiar with that kind of situation in their own life, their workplace, their family, their network of friends, fellowship? UUs have been asking this important question of how and where do we position ourselves so that the place is in the vast order is healthy, that position is healthy and gives us the best access to the sources of goodness in the world, so that you care about these relations. When we live out of our wholeness, we find a stability which allows patience and understanding to temper our righteousness, cool the anger of incineration, but it doesn't diminish our sense of what is true for us. We find the courage to speak our truth in ways that do not harm, but bring about more good in the world. I would like to share a blog from a good friend of mine, a professor of creative writing at the University of Oklahoma, Honoré Fanoni Jeffers. She wrote, "A while back, I was at a white girlfriend's dinner party with some academic friends, and there were two white men there who were gay and who were life partners. During the appetizers, the two men started talking badly about Christianity and Christians, calling them stupid and close-minded and homophobic. I defended myself as a progressive, pro-gay, feminist Christian. They sort of smirked at each other, and it made me mad. But I was glad I was at a good friend's home, and there was food on the table. I was raised, you don't break fool when you don't pay the rent, and you don't break bread in anger. So I let it go. But a few weeks later, I was spending time with a girlfriend who had thrown the dinner party, and I brought up the men's comments. I told her that when black folks came over on the slave ships, they had been taken from everything they knew, and they had to lie in their own physical mess, their feces, urine, and vomit. And so for many African Americans who had been converted to Christianity, that faith became a soft place to rest. I knew the practice of that faith had some problems. As a Christian, it hurt me for her to allow people to talk nasty about my faith because it took away part of my heritage. Finally, I shared that I was a child molestation survivor and a rape survivor too, and I had been through some real heavy stuff emotionally, and for me, faith in God was the only thing between me and leaving the world before my time. I love the Lord. I love His Son. And I wasn't ashamed to testify about that and the importance of my faith in my life. Then I changed the subject because I didn't want to shame her or hurt her feelings or make her think I was looking down on her because she was an atheist. I just wanted to tell her what was on my mind as a friend and someone who loved her. Because she was white, I didn't bring up the strange relationship black folks have had with Christian theology, not the actual tenets of the faith, but what some white men and women have burdened the faith with. It's how white Europeans justified their meanness, the slave trade and its accompanying displacement, rape, molestation, and murder of black women, children, and men, based on their interpretation of the Bible. Well before the slave trade started, racist theologians believed that black people were cursed. They pointed to the story of Ham and the Bible. Ham, the second son of Noah, and he laughed at his father one night when Noah had gotten drunk and lay asleep in the tent, butt naked. As a result of that laughter, Noah cursed his son. Throughout the ages, racist theologians have said that the curse Noah laid on Ham was blackness, and his station as servant of servants. And so for several centuries, Noah's cursing his son was used to justify slavery. But you read the passage. You don't see the word black anywhere in that Noah-Ham chapter in the Bible. You don't even see dark. But that doesn't matter, because anytime some white Christians want to explain why black folks are less than other, they point to the story of Noah and Ham. And in the same way, homophobic Christians point to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah or Paul's letter to low-rate and persecute homosexual people and explain why God doesn't like LGBT people. On a personal note, I have broken off friendships with black Christian friends because of their homophobia. I've stopped coming to my family reunions, too, because of this religious hatred. I have people tell me, family is family. But tell me, would you pay hundreds of dollars to show up to a reunion where your white relatives use the N-word or your male relatives call women blank and blank? You know, I just don't need good barbecue that bad. to suffer through somebody praying about the evil of men wearing dresses. We black folks always go back to slavery and talk about how we've been buked and scorned over the centuries. We bring up those slave ships that our ancestors rode in, lying in their filth and carrying their hurt heart. We are now guilty of the spiritual abominations of slave catchers and masters when we nurture homophobia in our community. White slave ship captains would get preachers to cloak these slave ships in the word of God. They used theology to justify murder and rape. They used the Bible now to tell LGBT black folks, their kin, that they're headed to hell and that Jesus hates them because of the way they were born to love. If we black folks are going to talk about our moral responsibility that America owes our black community, we should think about the type of community we need. We should think about the type of community we need. So here's a woman who has found some way of living in various roles in her complicated social structure. As a Christian feminist, African-American author, as an academic who has friends that are white that she loves, and then this whole incredible, crazy mix, this incredible pushing up against of each other, of all these tensions and tendencies, how do we resolve them? Well, many of you are reading, I think some of you at least are reading again the book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And my answer to that is there are not enough Unitarian Universalists. In the 19th century, there were over 80 attempts to form Unitarian and Universalist churches in this state. They did so that children would not be taught that they were going to be damned and go to hell. They wanted education to be available to every child without proselytizing. And one of the great people who is not lifted up anywhere in history, who has named the road that this street goes on, Zinedale Road, Hosiah Hobart Pillsbury, was a champion of civil rights, women's rights, and also animal rights. He was way before his time. He worked with Lloyd Garrison. He worked with Horace Greeley. He worked with Lydia and David Child, who ran and started one of the first African-American newspapers that were against slavery, and he worked for this newspaper. And then he moved out here in the third immigrant party from the East Coast, most of the people coming from Massachusetts and New Hampshire and New York. He came and started a post office, a school, a church on Pillsbury Crossing where many of our children gather and meet and play in the spring and the summer and the fall. And he was a devout believer in David Parker, who was one of the loudest voices in the 19th century that fought slavery with every bit of his heart's energy and his mind's strength. And in 1863, when he no longer could run the farm and the post office and all the stuff that he did because his health was failing, he bought a newspaper in Manhattan and renamed it the Independent. And in that newspaper, you can find in 1863 poems by African-American women. Amazing stuff. And if you look online, you will not find any of this information or very little of it. He hung out with all of the great people who tried and helped force our nation to become attentive to what it meant to be equal. In that Independent, I would like to just share one of the articles that he wrote quickly. If I can get there. I've gone through so much stuff already. Here we go. It's called Women and Work. We estimate the forwardness of our civilization by the position of woman. There is a great deal to be said for her cause and a great deal more to be done. This is 1863. In the case of the sewing woman in New York, the wrongs which they now endure ought to be set without delay. At present, they are paid from 25 to 50% less than they were paid 2 to 3 years ago, while every article they are compelled to purchase has doubled in price. Dressmakers, cloak makers, tassel makers, cloak makers, tent makers, burnishers, corset makers, tent makers, booksewers, hoop skirt makers, umbrella makers, hat binders, shirt sewers, wool sorters, hat makers, bobbin winders, vest makers, and sewing machine operators working from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. They can make only between $2.50 and $3 a week. Now, this is simply abominable. The men who are piling up wealth from the ready sale at advanced prices of the very goods which are made for starvation wages are literally coining money from tears, their blood, their happiness. It is time to set these inequities right. We cannot live in a world so stifled and oppressed. We must join the movement of working women. So there is a fervent cry from the 1860s from a man who came to Kansas to keep it a free state, who lifted up the rights of all people and animals and the interconnection of these things. He was a prophet. But his children were loath to admit that he was a Unitarian. It says in the very back of the book that he was writing in for 3 years by his daughter, he was a dyed-in-the-wool Unitarian. We have done our best to convince him otherwise. So, there is a prophet that we don't hear. Such goodness that came from his heart. And when he became postmaster of Manhattan, he had a little house with a kitchen and a stove, and there was a drunk that often was left out in the cold sleeping. And he would sometimes come and knock on Hosiah's door, and Hosiah would say, "Come on, sleep by the fire." And when his father died, the daughter would not let this man come in. She says, "I'm not half the person he was." So what an inspiration. How are you inspired by the goodness that others lift up and say, "Come on, folks, we can do this if we gather together, if we pull from our hearts all the energy and our minds focused with will to do good, to be good, to live good." So, what stories of goodness might you want to share, to lift up?
I understand. I mean, I realize that in our history there was a need to value the black race. I know 2 years after your speaking, 1862, was a bloody, cruel war, and a president that was dedicated to helping wipe out slavery. And if my son had to go to that war, and then if he had to kill his brother, I would want it recognized in history and not have only guilt years and years later when we have a president who's half black And everywhere I look on television, we have producers and we have CEOs.
So, Florence, what story do you have of goodness that you would like to share?
The goodness
from your experience.
All right, Mike, that I've known nothing except goodness and value.
Good.
But I wanted to say one thing about the black race and the horrible trip on the sea. The one thing that saved them, even when they came to land and live on the plantations, the gospel songs, their faith in God, and that's what helped them survive.
Thank you very much, Florence.
Jim Chanteau. When I was an undergraduate in college, those many, 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 many years ago, I was studying mechanical engineering, a career I thought I would definitely pursue, and found myself in the third year of my studies not knowing what or why I was doing it. I could not imagine living the life of building small things, which is mostly what mechanical engineers do, and found myself turning towards trying to understand what people did. And hadn't, through a bizarre set of circumstances, been introduced to the advisor to the campus Newman Club, whose name was Father O'Looney. Good old Irish priest. And it was through him that I had an opportunity to spend a summer in Mexico working on a Catholic student fix up a town project, I guess you would call it. It was there that I met Doreen, who was assigned to the same village from a different school. From that came my understanding that I needed to work with people, not things. I became a psychologist, and my being here today, the children that I have, everything came from Father O'Looney.
Thank you, Jim. Let's do Sue, and then we'll come up to Marissa since Sue's closer.
Good morning. I'm Sue Prey. Pay it forward is what I think of when someone helps you, and then you thank them, and the next person comes, and you pay it forward and help them. So goodness can lift others up and yourself.
Thank you, Sue.
I have way too many stories to share, so I'm going to lump it all together and basically just say the times that I lived and traveled all around the Middle East, I first was surprised by and then just came to rely on the goodness of the people there and being taken in. I can tell you dozens and dozens of stories of where I would just travel and someone would take me in for the night, for dinner, for lunch, get me where I was going. And I just got to the point where I didn't even make travel plans. I just traveled and relied on the goodness of the people that were just serendipity strangers, because I always got taken in.
Good. Other stories, other moments when something gets changed because of goodness, or you change because of goodness, or it works in many ways, of course. Gesundheit. High health. Well, I had hoped that I would be able to get these pieces all together in a way that would not focus on the negative, but it's through these incredible strains and tributaries, as Larry was illustrating, that come to gather together to form a history out of which we come. And it's a complex history. And none of the parts are good or bad from some place, because they are what have made us. And so understanding what makes us and delving into all those possibilities is a rich experience that religion offers. And our progressive faith hopefully offers a vision of goodness where everyone has a place and everyone knows how to be called into its beauty, to stand in its beauty. So now let's sing in its beauty. Our closing hymn, 329, Life Has a Loveliness to Sell. I share these closing words from Theodore Parker. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living. Go in goodness, go in peace, go in love.